2 months ago, Bishop Victoria had an opportunity to speak on this theme. Now I get my chance, the theme of the dedication of our parish church and what it's for. You know, the parish church is a comparatively recent invention. There was no such thing for the first 500 years or so of the Christian church, because as a persecuted sect, Christians met in house churches. And when Christianity came above ground after the Constantinian Revolution, they met together in a big public building called the Basilica, used for imperial receptions, where the bishop celebrated the Eucharist. Christianity was an overwhelmingly urban phenomenon then, and all Christians gathered together in that place, in that city, for that one service of the bishop's Eucharist. And there's some theologians who are saying that that was the best time of the church. If you believe that the Eucharist makes the church, then it's absolutely appropriate that all Christians should be together in one place for the bishop to be the celebrant and preacher. And really in those days, the clergy were just his helpers and assistants. But when Christianity got a bit big for its meeting in just basilicas, a fateful decision was made that they would create other churches throughout the city and delegate some of the episcopal powers to clergy to be the parish priests. And so this phenomenon got going. But it still took another 500 years or so to reach the kind of structure that we now know. When Christianity became what we call Christendom throughout Northern Europe, now there was an attempt to have a church in every significant locality with a priest living there able to celebrate the Mass. And after the Reformation, they kind of upped the ante a bit. Now the local parish church was supposed also to be majoring in teaching the Christian faith, catechising people in it. Faith, according to Protestant reformers, was about hearing the word and understanding it and assenting to it. Now there was a renewed function of the teaching ministry of the church. But also, just as significantly, the church was supposed to be the kind of major community focus, and the parson, the community person, was supposed to be the significant figure in the community. I was thinking about this the other two Saturdays ago as I wandered down the main street of the Prince Albert Road, you know, the attempt to revitalise the shopping centre. This was my old hardwired part of the brain that says you should always turn up whenever there's some community event to be seen. And it took quite a while for this to get going in Dunedin, because of course the Diocese of Dunedin had less money than any other diocese. Bishop Neville had difficulty recruiting skilled personnel, and we were kind of overshadowed by the Presbyterians. So the recreating this dream of a church in every significant area of settlement with a resident parish priest took a long time to achieve, and really didn't happen until the interwar period under Bishop Fitchett and then the salad days of the 1950s and 60s under Bishop Johnston, when the baby boomer generation made things very propitious for the church. Now, the way of being parish church was also extended by what we call mission churches. That's why St. Peter's created Holy Cross St. Kilda, and then it broke away in 1917 to become its own parish church, and then St. Peter the Less and St. Clair and St. Albans Corstorphine. In the era before the motor car, the aim was to have a place of Anglican worship with an easy walking distance. And the idea was, you said, you've got a Sunday school here, we're over here, Anglicans, come and see us. And that dream lasted for a while. Since everybody got mobile, and since the baby boomer generation who provided all the kind of recruiting people for the Sunday school movement faded away, those mission churches faded away also. Now, we might just notice one or two things, that in the early days of this, well, the reason why this parish church exists in this part of the world is that, of course, South Dunedin didn't have as many Scottish Presbyterians as other parts of the city. Lots of Baptists here and lots of Catholics. And so the fateful decision in 1864 to build a church up there on South Road was a reflection of the fact that there was a sufficient base of Anglicans to get things going. And they had a real problem about keeping vicars. Bishop Neville had this problem about recruiting clergy who wanted to stay, but the vicar who did stay the longest in that late 19th century period was Ronaldson, who was very keen on the Masons, And, you know, he made the fateful decision to bring the church, to build a brick church down here on this particular site with these particular kind of porous soils. And when we look up there at the window, we're looking at, it was a grand Masonic ceremony at the opening of this church, and it's, that window's full of Masonic symbols, unfortunately. It's a reflection of his great enthusiasm. Dear, dear, dear. Anyway, the next vicar to stay, Brian King, son of the great ritualist martyr of St. George the East, you know, came here as part of Bishop Neville's dream, because he was brought here by Bishop Neville from Tasmania to be a tutor at Selwyn Theological College in Bishop Sir Neville's attempt to get clergy trained locally, which on the whole did work in terms of clergy who tended to stay longer and were a bit better trained. He found Bishop Neville a bit hard to take, as many clergy did, and I think that's why he accepted the living of this parish. Now, there's been another fundamental shift in the way in which parish churches are now working. Because of the kind of marginalisation of the churches, because of the increasing mobility of people, what's happened is that parish churches, instead of trying to be a kind of catchment for all the Anglicans in that area, have now intended to become what we call niche market churches. What I mean by that is, if you take a long, hard look at the major Anglican churches in this city, they tend to represent a particular strand of the Anglican tradition, a particular emphasis within it, and people travel to that. This is really rather what the Anglican church has become in North America, where, you know, Anglicans are an incredibly small proportion of the total population. There's more Episcopalians in Rhode Island than anywhere else, but they're still only 7% of the population. So it's a gathered church. And although not a few parishioners still live in the area, we tend to also draw people from much further afield. And this has had bizarre consequences for what's happened to parish churches throughout New Zealand. You know, the Diocese of Auckland estimates that 80% of its church going is going on in 6 of its churches, which raises major implications for the small, struggling, marginal churches. And I really just want to finish with a few take-home messages that are drawn out of my vicar's report from the 2014 annual general meeting. In this situation, it's really important that we are welcoming people, because the Lord does send us new people who come to try us out from time to time. And sometimes there are even people in our locality who are wanting to come back again. I don't mean being all over them like a rash. I mean that if you see them struggling with our liturgical literature, you just quietly draw alongside them and show them where to find the page. And afterwards, you have a word of welcome, not just sticking to talking to people you feel comfortable with, but those who do appear to be strangers. Sometimes they're very interesting. I was talking to a young Vietnamese woman here 2 weeks ago who was, she's come to New Zealand to try out her, improve her English so she can be trained as a nurse. I pointed out to her there were Vietnamese seminarians now living in the presbytery at Holy Name Parish. They've got the same challenge to get their English up before the bishop will ordain them. And the other thing, I think, is about being inviting people. You know, in our recent 150th, we've flushed out of the woodwork a number of people who have once been very well connected to this parish. They came back for old time's sake. And if you find somebody like that living in your street or nearby you, and you know, you're aware of each other, I'm not asking you to be street corner preachers and evangelists. You just go to them and say, "Great to see you there. Here's the rock, here's a photograph, it's got you in it. And by the way, I'm going to this particular thing at the church. Would you like to come with me?" We know that people tend to get going again when there's a connection point. They're invited by somebody and brought along. I think the other thing, it's really important that we do what we do well. We're a very well-organised parish, and it's a reflection of the fact that we've got key personnel who work so hard. There was Tubby Naval working in the garden yesterday. David's always working most of Saturday to get the church ready. I'm trying to put my best foot forward liturgically and preaching as well. And, you know, we're never going to be a popular option, style of religion we're putting forward. We're kind of a concert programme religion in the commercial radio world. And I think that we need to be proud of that and not walk away from it. There are so-called vibrant, successful, alive churches which are really aimed at the consumer demands of the particular newcomers. and they don't let on about the real demands of real deal Christianity. And I think when all the froth and bubble of that stuff fades away, the authentic conservers and transmitters of authentic Christianity will stand revealed for what they are. And what we major in through the sense of liturgical engagement with God is what I would call a contemplative dimension of religion, the sense of the numinous and the holy, the sense of the mystery of God. Everything's not, you know, explained in trivial, trite, banal ways. And we need to be proud of that and not lose our nerve. I keep thinking of that refrain that ran through The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, don't panic, and that should be our refrain too. To take a quiet pride in what we're doing, to be inviting, welcoming, and do it well. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.